Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome back to the program today James Church. His new novel is A Drop of Chinese Blood. Welcome back to the program, sir.
Thank you. Very good to be here.
The last time we had you on was for your book, The Man with the Baltic Stare.
That's right.
And this was an Inspector O novel, and so I was really amazed and surprised to read your new book, because you've gone somewhere I never expected you to go. Tell us about this new book and how the story came about.
I took a leap off a cliff, sort of a literary cliff in a way. I decided to change the point of view, the perspective, by making Inspector O the object, and having a new person, having a new first-party person, actually explaining the story, being the narrator. And it came about because a friend of mine, when we were in Pyongyang, we were at a flower show, and a friend of mine who's also interested in detective novels said, you know, Nero Wolfe likes orchids, and we were looking at various flowers. He said, why don't you have Inspector O meet Nero Wolfe?
Huh.
And I said, nah, impossible, can't do it. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, well, why not? So I realized Inspector O would be best as a Nero Wolfe character, and I had to invent Archie.
Oh.
And I couldn't figure out how to do it until I realized I had left myself a escape hatch in the fourth book, Man with the Baltic Stare, when O meets his nephew.
Hmm.
And I thought, well, let's see where that goes.
And his nephew is a Chinese official.
That's right, which is how he's introduced, as a matter of fact, in the fourth book. I did not do this with malice aforethought. I actually didn't. But he's a Chinese security official in northeast China, which is right across the border from North Korea. And so he has some knowledge of the same sorts of problems and possibilities that O has in terms of security problems. Although he approaches it from the Chinese point of view, not the North Korean point of view. And so O is suddenly in a strange land, even though it's just across the border. It's China. And he has to cope with that. He has to cope with his nephew, who he's not sure is as competent as he should be, although he actually is a very competent official. And the nephew has to put up with Inspector O, who is, from the outside, a pretty tough character. He can be very biting, very sarcastic. When you're inside his skin, he doesn't seem quite as prickly in some ways, because it's softened by his own perceptions. From the outside, though, he sounds really tough, and that's what his nephew has to learn to live with.
And I was also pleasantly surprised. I thought I was reading a crime novel, but this is really an espionage novel, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is. It has crime in it. Most of the old books are like this. They have some crime in them, but then they get tangled around espionage activities as well.
And for those readers who are familiar with your character, Inspector O, he's supposedly retired.
That's right.
And he has a thing for wood.
He does.
And in China, he's making lots of bookshelves.
That's right. He has an opportunity finally in China to settle into a workshop, which he could never do in North Korea, and just sort of let his artistic juices flow. And they happen to be flowing all under this one great river of creating bookcases of various sizes, shapes, configuration. And they're all over his book, his workshop.
And his nephew, How did they end up living together? I wasn't quite clear on how this came about. Is that something that you've explored?
I think I do a little bit. O has to leave North Korea because in the new regime, people are going through lists of former employees and who was in what faction, and they're starting to be purges. So somebody tips O off that his name is about to come up and he'd better leave.
Ah.
So he doesn't really know where to go, but he has just met his nephew, and so he goes across and he knocks on his nephew's door, and his nephew has to take him in. After all, it's his uncle, his long-lost uncle. And so they just start from there. He's only been in China about 2 years when the book opens. I think that's right.
And so here we have O living in China with his nephew, who is of Korean and Chinese descent.
That's right.
The title of the book refers to the nephew's descent. And it's That's interesting right. as we read it to see how certain people will look at each other and decide what their nationality is and how important this is.
Yeah, it's a curious thing, isn't it? How we define people on the basis of blood sometimes when that has actually nothing to do with who they are or very little to do with who they are.
And this book is written in three parts. And in the second part, we make a little journey to Mongolia. And I looked at the ending of the book, and it looks like you wrote a good portion of this book in Mongolia. Is that correct?
I went to Mongolia a couple of times, I can't remember exactly when, fairly recently. And almost as soon as I got there, I knew it was the perfect place for Inspector O. It just had the right sense of energy and mystery, and the natural setting is so wonderfully overwhelming that I thought O would be... To put O in that situation would just be perfect for him because it would make him both uneasy and awestruck at what he saw.
I've seen films of Mongolia, and it seems like the sky just goes on forever.
That's right. That's one of the things that strikes O about it. It's too much sky, you know, for him.
Let's give listeners some sense of what this book is about without throwing out any spoilers. You've got some plot points I think that you can give out, can't you?
I think so. If I can go back and remember. Yes. It turns out that Inspector O and his nephew have to solve the riddle of a national seal that has been purloined, possibly counterfeited. It's very important because very important documents are stamped with this seal. In fact, in the very beginning of the book, that's what really started me on this plot. There was, in fact, an article in the South Korean news agency about somebody who had counterfeited a very important seal and was sent to jail for it. And I started thinking about, what would that mean? So anyway, they have to find this, they have to locate who it is that has possession of this seal. And it actually leads them into, as you suggested, into espionage because there are double and triple agents who are involved in it. The Chinese are involved partially. Chinese government is partially involved. So is the South Korean government. And they all end up in Mongolia, chasing each other around, trying to either find the seal or keep the seal out of somebody else's hands.
The book is A Drop of Chinese Blood. James Church wrote it. He joins us on the program today. And the seal is really important because it can certify a lot of very important transactions, and anyone that's following world news knows that China is rushing headlong to secure access to as much of the natural resources of the world that they can. Coal, petroleum, rare earths, precious metals, you name it.
That's right. And Mongolia happens to be quite rich in natural resources and is under a lot of pressure from the Chinese and the Russians and others who are actually trying to capture possession of those resources and get them out of the country. And one of the ways to get them out of the country is actually through a North Korean port, Port of Rosson, which is in the northeast corner of North Korea. It's just now being developed. And in fact, it is the focal point for Chinese, Russian, and believe it or not, even Mongolian interest, because it is an important outlet to world trade routes in that part of the Asian continent.
James, your pen name, James Church, is a pseudonym, and I am reluctant to say anything about your biography because I really don't know anything about it. But if you were to give our listeners some sense of what you would like to reveal about yourself, what would you say?
I'm getting old. I spent my life working on North Korea. I spent my life working on Asia. And it's very easy to fall in love with the people out there because not just of the cultures they represent, but because of the hardships they have gone through and the great sort of strength of character that they show even in the midst of all this hardship. So I've learned a lot from them. And I hope some of that love for the place comes out in the books that I've written.
Hmm. I think it does. When you look at things, you're not really a disinterested observer. You know these countries very well. What are your thoughts about the new regime in North Korea? It's very interesting to observe.
It is. I like to think, rather than give people my own view of it, I really like to put myself in the place of Inspector O, that is, try to imagine what it's like looking at it as it has emerged. Mm. And my sense is that the new young leader has really injected the atmosphere with a sense of youth and promise and energy. Whether or not they've done that very deliberately or whether it just flows from the fact that he is young, seemingly energetic, I don't actually know. But it's sort of been a jolt of energy to the system.
Uh-huh.
And it has given people a little bit of renewed hope that as bad as the situation is, they'll be able to work themselves out of it. You know, there's great respect for age and experience in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
Much, much more than we have in this country. But it's also true that a large percentage of the population, certainly in North Korea today, is fairly young. And I really suspect that these younger people are happy to have at the very top of the pyramid somebody who is more, in some ways, more like them.
Mm-hmm.
And not one of these old guys who lived through the Korean War and can tell them all the old terrible stories about life the way it used to be, as opposed to the way they're living it today. So I don't know if this gives a window of opportunity for new ideas, really new change in North Korea. We'll have to see. It's only been 1 year.
Uh-huh.
The next year will probably be a little bit more illustrative about the way things are going to move.
It's probably somewhat reassuring to older North Koreans that the new leader looks a lot like his grandfather.
I think he certainly does. He looks as if he has made a very careful study of his grandfather and how he interacted with people.
Uh-huh.
And has a much warmer sense to him.
James Church joins us. His new novel is A Drop of Chinese Blood. And there's the siren in the background.
They're not after me, I can tell you that.
A little ambient sound for atmosphere. There's a, I think that siren is appropriate because this book is written with a really noir sensibility, I think. As I was reading it, I chuckled because when the nephew sees a very attractive woman, he always reacts. And,
right.
And there's something very almost Chandler-esque about that.
That's deliberate. I wanted, he should be like Archie in the Rex Stout novels as well,
uh-huh.
I think. I have developed, it's almost like a summer stock. I've developed almost a cast of characters that appear, you know, with different costumes on throughout the books. And some people say, well, you know, these characters don't have any depth. Well, in this sort of writing, all the characters don't have depth. They're not supposed to. They have a purpose to move things along or to create atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
They're real people like in a play on a stage. Somebody walks on and delivers some lines and leaves. The lines may be important, but that person is not absolutely critical. You don't have to know them as 3D. So the interchange between Major Bing and the women is exactly that. Although I got to say, I developed another vamp in this book that I hadn't expected. Miss Du, the
uh-huh.
wife, I mean the daughter of the character who's being held hostage. Oh, here comes another siren. Jeez, it must be a busy day for the boys in blue. This second vamp was a surprise to me. I didn't know she was coming, and I really had a lot of fun as she sort of blossomed in the pages.
The book is A Drop of Chinese Blood. James Church wrote it. Did you enjoy changing your perspective of Inspector O, or are we going to see more novels with Bing, the nephew, as the person who's telling the story?
You know, I never know from after I've finished one novel whether there's going to be another one coming. Although I have to admit, a title occurred to me, and it said, I really like the title. And once I have a title, it really sort of kicks me into gear, because then I have to write the novel. You know, who knows what life brings.
Yeah. So the titles give you that motivation to flesh out the story.
Yeah, they do. They do.
Well, you have some great titles. In fact, the last one, The Man with the Baltic Stare, I love that title.
I'm happy with the titles. I'm happy that the publisher has let me use them. And you know, in this day of Kindle, it's hard for everybody to understand that books have covers.
Mm.
And I must say that I've been very pleased with the covers, every single one of the covers that the publisher has come up with. I think their art department has done a wonderful job.
Well, the cover on this new one is very subtle.
It is.
I didn't notice her right away.
Yeah, I know. And well, we had a little bit of a tussle on this cover, I must admit, but I think it turned out fine.
When I first looked at it, I thought, oh, it's kind of nondescript. And then I realized I wasn't really seeing what it is.
Right. There's a new, I don't know if you noticed, there's a new picture of James Church in the back of the book as well.
Well, I'm going to have to look at that because I read The Galley.
Yeah.
And I have the hardcover, which I'll have to look in the back. There's actually a photo of you?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, I don't know if you remember the other books had photos of me in a real noir pose, very dark and shadowy, and you couldn't see my face.
Oh.
And I decided I wanted a new look, so I put a new photo with it.
I'll have to check that out.
Okay, good.
So you have a lot of bad guys in your books, and in this one there's plenty of them, but we're never
right.
sure who they are.
Well, you know, when you're in the intelligence business, frequently you know bad things are happening, but you're not exactly sure who the bad guys are either. That's sort of the way you end up living your life. And I think that's especially true for Inspector O, and now for Major Bing, too.
I really enjoyed the fact that so much of it was set in China, because this is a country that is so mysterious to most Americans, yet it's so important to most Americans. I think that we don't realize how important China is to just the whole world.
You are absolutely right, and I think we are way behind in understanding the changes in China over the last 10 years, the changes in their own self-perception, in their own self-confidence, and their sense that they should be treated as equals and influential factor on the world stage in a way that they weren't like 10 years ago or so. It's when you go to China now, it's so obvious that they have, once again, they have come of age, and they're not going to take any guff from anybody.
Can you still find good noodles?
Actually, yes, I must say.
Yeah. Oh, Inspector O is a connoisseur of noodles, isn't he?
That's right. That's right. Even in North Korea, he was partial to noodles, but mm-hmm. you can have slightly better noodles in China, I think.
Some of our listeners probably haven't read your Inspector O books. Why don't you tell us a little bit about him? Because he's had a very interesting career.
He has. I think the most important thing to understand about Inspector O is that he was raised by his grandfather, because both of his parents were killed in the Korean War. And his grandfather was a hero of the anti-Japanese struggle in the 1920s and 1930s. But what that means is his grandfather knew Korea before it was divided and before there was a communist North Korea. And so, as he was growing up, sort of soaked up this notion of the essential, the historical Korea, not the Korea that exists today with this overlay of different sorts of governments and, you know, foreign influences, but the core of what it is to be Korean going back centuries and centuries. That's what allows him to keep a sense of equilibrium, even under the circumstances that his current political system presents him with and the pressures that they put him under. And it's also why he won't leave. Many times people say to me, well, why doesn't he just defect? Because he frequently goes out of the country on business. He won't defect for the same reason a lot of North Koreans won't defect, because North Korea is home.
Uh-huh.
That really is home. And as bad as things sometimes are, that's family. You know, that's the soil that their grandparents are buried in. Those are their roots, and you don't just run away from that. It's not easy to do.
And he's got a thing for wood, and it doesn't come through as much in this particular book, but the previous book, wow, he was really getting into the wood.
The wood is an important emotional escape for O. And he learns that different types of wood have different characteristics and different personalities. And from his grandfather, he gets this appreciation for, it's not just wood, it's trees. It's another living being out there that doesn't happen to have a human form, but can, as his grandfather teaches him, can teach you a lot about existence and your place in the universe, I think.
I think one of the most enjoyable aspects of this new book, A Drop of Chinese Blood, is that we're talking about some very serious topics. There's violence, and yet there's something very lighthearted and humorous about this book.
I'm glad that I achieved that, because that's what I was aiming for in many ways. Actually, each one of the books has its own tone.
Uh-huh.
And I don't actually govern that tone. It just comes out as I'm writing it, and it sort of builds on itself. And the first book is probably the darkest in many ways.
Mm.
The third book is pretty dark, too. But this one didn't start out that way. You're right. It has some scenes in it, although I have a confession to make. I have a hard time writing violence. But in any case, I wanted that. Yes, I needed that tone. Otherwise, it would sort of undercut the flow of the whole story.
Well, it does come as a slight surprise when the nephew actually gets kind of tough in one scene. I was shocked.
You know, I was too. When I started writing that scene, I didn't know where it was going. And I was sort of surprised at how brutal he could be. And yet, when you go back and you think about who he is, his reputation within the ministry, and what he has to deal with, it really isn't a surprise. It isn't something he likes to do. He's not a sadist. But when it's necessary, and when matters, you know, important matters of state and personal security are involved, he has the backbone to do what's necessary.
And there's one character that you obviously had a lot of fun with, because she's a contortionist.
Oh, yes.
You just had a great time with that one, didn't you?
I loved her. I especially liked the line where her boss says she works flexible hours. As soon as I wrote that, I thought, where did that come from?
Well, it's really a pleasure to read, and it's really a treat to have you back on the program.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
The book is A Drop of Chinese Blood by James Church. It was just published by Minotaur Books. And it's an Inspector O novel, but it's a very different Inspector O novel. What should we call this, a nephew novel? What should we call this?
I thought it was part of the Inspector O series. It got advertised as a spinoff.
Okay.
And I don't think of it that way, actually, but however people want to think of it is fine with me.
Well, I love the approach that you took in it. And
oh, good.
It was really a page-turner. So I'm hoping that this title that you have in your head right now somehow gets transformed into another novel, because we'd love to have you back on the program.
Good. Thank you very much. I'll do my best.
You've been listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. The book was A Drop of Chinese Blood by James Church. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for listening. On January 1st, 1863, President Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. It was the height of the Civil War. 1862 hadn't been a very good year for the Union forces. And then there was that pesky Indian rebellion on the frontier. Next week we'll hear about it. As Scott W. Berg talks about 38 nooses, Lincoln, Little Crow, and the beginning of the frontier's end. It's in the Book Nook, right here on WYSO. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.